days, anything under 250 million, you know, compromised records doesn't even make headlines, right? However, it's kind of the death by a thousand cuts, right? You've got hundreds of thousands of companies experiencing data breaches on a micro level, just on an ongoing basis, but none of those make headlines, right?
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today, I have Tom Lambot joining me. Tom is the founder of Bobeguard, a turnkey cybersecurity solution for solo and small law firms, as well as Global Mac IT, which is a managed service provider for firms with 10 or more users using Mac exclusively. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So you have two different brands that are focused on providing IT services for attorneys. I want to hear about why you have the two different brands and how they differ and just how they started. So can you talk about that just for a minute?
Yeah, so I started GlobeMac IT in 2006. I was starting something new. Essentially, I loved helping others and I loved Macs. And so I put them together and it kind of evolved and grew from there. And so I've been doing that for, you know, about 15 years now. And a couple of years ago, I found myself turning more and more prospective clients away, because as GlobeMac IT grew, so did our kind of user minimum, right? As we kind of matured, we realized that, hey, 10 and above, that's really the sweet spot for, you know, good, profitable, healthy client that we can provide a lot of value to. And so I always made myself available for solo and small firms, even if I knew they had less than 10 people and they probably wouldn't be a good fit for our services. I'm really big on serving and really helping first. And so with the solos and small firms, I would always, you know, make sure I would provide, you know, really useful guidance and specific actions and things they could do to kind of, you know, get closer to what they were seeking to get to. But ultimately, I realized that I was throwing them back into the wild and that they didn't really have, they didn't have a good other resource to go to. I didn't have a specific person that could take these leads and take them to the end zone. And what I also realized was that what most of them truly needed help with was the cybersecurity element, the security side of things. See, over the past decade, as the cloud has been adopted more and more and more, especially in the past 5 years, it kind of reached a tipping point in the legal industry. The technology side has gotten a lot easier in terms of, you know, if you want to set up 365 and your case management software and file storage, you can do all that one afternoon. You don't need any servers. You don't need to hire expensive IT people, right? And so the technology side is easier to manage. However, while the technology has gotten easier, the cybersecurity threats have continued to evolve. And what I realized a couple years ago was like, man, how can I help them? How can I provide more value? And then it eventually morphed into Bobeguard, because what I realized is that the majority of lawyers, 49% of lawyers are solos, another 14% are in small firms with 2 to 5 lawyers. So you've got 63% of lawyers in the US who don't have access to the right cybersecurity solutions. They don't know what to get. They don't know what they need. You know, how much is too much? And if they go out and read to an IT provider because they really want to do it right, the majority of them are turned away because most IT companies like GlobeMac IT have strict user minimums, like a 10 or 20 or 25 user minimum is not uncommon. So that's kind of what, you know, where Bobeguard came from and the reasoning between the two different brands. And then the last thing on Bobeguard, as I was kind of creating the solution and I pulled back all the security layers that we use and have curated over the years, I realized that only one of them was really Mac specific and actually went onto the computer and we had access to the same version of the tools for Windows. So all of a sudden my market, you know, grew tenfold and I was like, man, I can really make a difference and help a lot of people here. So that's kind of the quick story behind Bobeguard.
That's great. So As a firm of, well, I guess any size, you know, when I hear about cybersecurity, it sounds sort of daunting, right? I mean, it sounds like the big guys getting hammered by, you know, denial of service attack or something. How do you coach or encourage your legal clients to approach cybersecurity? I mean, what lengths should they go? What's too much energy? What's not enough energy? What's a reasonable amount of defense they should put up, you know, with their IT?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And that's where the response is very traditional, right? You go out and Google cybersecurity solution, 47 million hits, right? Cybersecurity market is absolutely flooded with different solutions. And the majority of these solutions are going after, you know, enterprise, larger companies, right? Big law, even mid-sized law firms. And then, you know, it's kind of upside down in terms of where the resources are focused. They're all focused on the top layer, right? That's where you hear about, you know, having penetration testing. And, you know, your business needs a SOC, which stands for Security Operations Center, right? And you get all these really advanced cybersecurity solutions that are completely overkill for the average lawyer, right? Again, 49% of lawyers are solos. And so a solo does not need a SOC. They do not need penetration testing or, you know, denial of service, attack monitoring, and that kind of stuff, right? And so that's the fine balance that people need to figure out is, okay, what is, you know, what's too much? What's overkill? What do I need? What do I not need? And, you know, essentially that's what we've built into BobaGuard is getting that right mix of cost and functionality and, you know, accessibility. Like, well, this is a great solution, but it's $800 a month. That doesn't make sense for most solos or small firms. And so we've kind of narrowed it down to 8 different security layers that we've kind of packaged in. And so I think to answer your question, you know, the first step is to figure out what are the tools that you're going to need, right? So we took a 2-step approach. What tools do we need for the job at hand, right? So you got to get really clear on who your audience is. Okay, so we're working with solo and small firms. That's what I really wanted to help because I saw they were totally stranded. There's no good solution for them. And so looking at that, just like if you're doing a home improvement job, you're like, okay, what tools do I have to grab? I'm going to need my measuring tape, my hammer, power drill. You know, I had to build a mailbox over the weekend because I knocked down my old one with my ride-on mower, and the wood was kind of broken down and the thing just shattered. So I had to go to Home Depot and buy some tools I didn't have, right? So you got to figure out what are the tools you need for the job. And then step 2 that I think is really important is, okay, now that I know I need this tool, what is the best tool that's going to make the job as easy as possible for me? Right? I can use a screwdriver or I can use a power drill. The latter is going to make life a lot easier. Do you want me to kind of jump into the specific tools or where do you want me to go from there before I just keep on yapping?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, what I'm sort of curious about is like, what do law firms really have to look out for? Like what's a real security risk for a firm of 5 people or less? Because you hear about, you know, Target, database being, you know, penetrated and all their data is stolen. And like, you just hear a bunch of data stolen, all personal data stolen. That's just like, kind of like scary in itself. But what do smaller firms that use like third-party providers like Clio and use maybe Dropbox or something or box.com or whatever it is, what are their real risks that they have to pay attention to that are reasonable risks that they should actually spend time thinking about?
Yes. And that's a great question. I think an important point is kind of, I guess like I can call it bringing it home, right? The problem with the majority of the headlines is that they're so unrealistic. They're like in a completely different world, right? And when you hear, examples like that, you automatically exclude yourself, right? For example, the average business that has a data breach, you know, the average cost is $1.2 million or, you know, $2.6 million. As soon as you hear that, you go, okay, cool. I don't have to worry about it because that's for giant enterprises that are getting hit. You know, if they came in, they wouldn't get $2.6 million out of my solo law firm, right? Or when you hear about the data breaches of, you know, nowadays, anything under $250 million, you know, compromised records doesn't even make headlines, right? However, it's kind of the death by a thousand cuts, right? You've got hundreds of thousands of companies experiencing data breaches on a micro level, just on an ongoing basis, but none of those make headlines, right? So they don't hear about the problems. And one of my biggest kind of marketing mantras is it doesn't exist until you promote it, right? And so it's the same thing here. Again, the reality is a lot of lawyers think they're not at risk because they're not hearing real world stories of solo and small firms just like them getting hacked all the time. However, it's happening. And so the most common security threats, you know, that I kind of educate and talk about, the first are business email compromises. So business email compromise is extremely common. And business email compromise is when someone gets into your email account, right? They somehow get access to your credentials through phishing. Maybe your credentials are on the dark web, right? Could be a number of different kind of ways that they get it. And what they do when they get into your email account nowadays is they just sit there and they wait and they prowl. The great thing about 365 and Google Workspace, they've got every single thing in there very conveniently indexed, which is really handy if I want to find the email that I sent you 3 months ago, Adam, right? I can find it in 2 seconds. Now, if I'm a cyber criminal, I'm sitting in your email account, I've got a list of keywords to search for. I'm going to search for a password. I'm going to search KW. You sent your password to someone on your team, but you didn't want to write passwords, so you put PW, right? They're going to search for routing numbers, banking information. They also sit there and they look at your sent folder. They look in your inbox. They look at events, you know, kind of events that are about to happen or that have happened, right? So business email compromise is a giant threat, you know, especially when you look at, you know, routing info and bank transfers, that kind of stuff. I have had so many, you know, first world examples and stories of these things happening or almost happening. You know, employees, I think, are the second biggest threat that is not, you know, people don't think about it. Underrated, you know, security threat makes the obviously you've got nefarious employees, right? Disgruntled workers that want to cause havoc and damage. But those are a real threat. The bigger threat, however, are employees that succumb to phishing schemes, that reuse passwords, that access systems on unsecured networks, you know, accidentally delete files. Those kinds of things happen on a regular basis. You know, especially with COVID, when you throw that into the mix, you know, over the past, you know, 2 years, cybercrime has grown exponentially because they've had way more opportunities. You know, cyber criminals know how and when to prey on fear and uncertainty. Cyber criminals, it's also important to realize that it is organized crime, right? They are well-funded. They work 9-to-5 jobs. They wear suits and ties. You know, it's not, you know, Fred living in your mother's basement playing video games and hacking on the side for fun, you know? So they read Robert Cialdini. You know, they know the factors he talks about, influence. They've probably read Persuasion, right, his latest book. And they know that, you know, for marketers, Adam, you probably know the best time to send it to host a webinar, right? We know we get a higher show rate on Thursday afternoons versus Friday morning. And the cyber criminals, in the same way, they know the best time of the day and the best day of the week to have high click-through rates. Right, they know that on a Friday at 4 p.m., you're trying to wrap up your day. You've got your kids running around because you're working home. You're distracted. Most likely to fall for a phishing scheme at that time.
That's really interesting. You know, with the email, what I've often thought about is, okay, I don't want to send something, you know, confidential because it'll get intercepted. Like that's been my mindset. Like it's somehow going to get intercepted somewhere on the interwebs. But what you're describing has nothing to do with interception. It's if someone gets access to the email account, then it's just stored, right? And sent email and all of those things are stored. So even if you say, I'm going to send this in a separate email or something, it's like it's still in your email account. It doesn't actually protect you if you're sending separate emails. That's really interesting. So yeah. One of the things that I've been thinking about quite a bit lately with my team. And, you know, as an example, in Facebook ads and those ad accounts, if those get hacked, there can be a lot of damage done with people spending a lot of advertising dollars. And I've seen it happen somewhat recently. When there's a large data breach at somewhere like Target and they get usernames and passwords, is it accurate that someone will take that username and password and just try it against, like, quote unquote, every website out there to try and get access? So if you use the same password, if it's breached in one place, then it provides exposure to all of your other accounts. Is that how that works?
Yeah, essentially, you know, 36% or I forget what it is. Again, it's a super high percentage of people reuse their password between personal and work accounts, right? Most people have three passwords, right? And unless you're, let me put it this way, unless you're using a password manager, it's almost guaranteed that you're one of the, you know, majority of people that are using three passwords. You've got the one password you used forever a long time ago. Then at one point, one of your accounts said, hey, that's not secure. You got to change it. We need to have a number. So you said, okay, I'm going to put a one at the end of my password. And then a few months later, your bank said, hey, that password is not going to cut it. We need a special character. So you said, okay, I'm going to change the X into a 5. Or the O into a 0. No one else is going to think of that. Humans are not predictable, right? And so they had those three passwords and they started using them everywhere. They'll use the same passwords between work accounts and personal accounts. So all of a sudden, that Netflix data breach that you might not think is a risk to your business is, because there's a high chance that, you know, your assistant or someone on your team is using the same password on Netflix account as she is in your email account. And now that's a way for them to get in, you know. So there's so many different ways to find the information. I mean, most likely your password is already on the dark web. Right. The way that cyber criminals make their money is not when they breach. I like to use Netflix just because that one always pops in my head. I'm a criminal. I hack Netflix. I get 150 million usernames and passwords. I haven't gotten paid yet. I get paid when I go on the dark web, which is, you know, the Amazon for cyber criminals, and I list them for sale. And I say, hey, I've got 150 million, you know, credentials, passwords been unencrypted, you know, and then other criminals come and say, hey, I'll take 5 million from Netflix, 1 million from Chase, I'll take 10 million from Home Depot. And then they go to work and they start using those credentials, you know, in every place that they can find. And again, now, you know, you might be thinking, well, how is that going to threaten my employee if someone finds their, you know, Netflix account with their personal email account? If I have a personal email account, I can find the person's name. Let's say it's adam@gmail.com personal account. I can find that. I can find you on LinkedIn and I can find your work email. Now I've got your work email and the credential from Netflix and I can see if those work. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So these are savvy criminals.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what we saw recently on the Facebook side, you talked about bridging business and personal. So Facebook is clearly, you know, generally a personal sort of space. But if you're running ads, then it's you log in with your personal account to run the business manager. And what people I've been seeing happen is people's employees' personal accounts are hacked. Then the criminal goes in and they remove everybody else on the ad account. So nobody has access. And then they change the ad accounts to spend $2,000 a day and they advertise something that you're not actually wanting to advertise.
That's crazy.
And I've seen it happen multiple times. And so we've been really strict about two-factor authentication and then also passwords. But you brought up password managers and I wanted to ask you your read on those, because to me, they seem like a great idea. And then right after I think about that, I think, well, if someone hacked the password manager company, you know, all hell's going to break loose. So what's your view on password managers? We use LastPass and I love their functionality. Crazy random passwords that autocomplete with facial recognition on my phone. Mm-hmm. Super easy to use, but my entire life is in LastPass.
Yeah. I believe the risk is extremely low. You know, we use 1Password. That's kind of our, you know, personal favorite. LastPass, you know, Dashlane. There's other tools. I believe less in, you know, picking one tool. Oh, we use 1Password, therefore everyone else should use 1Password. I'm biased. I think it's a great solution, but I'm not saying, like, if you're using LastPass, you're leagues ahead of the average person that's not using a password manager. So again, you know, I think the key is using a password manager, because like you said, it helps you create unique passwords. It automatically fills them in. You know, they're getting better and better. So now they can tell you, hey, you've got 8 different websites with the same password, right? It'll even do some basic, some minimal kind of dark web scanning. So there's a lot of great security tools built into them. And it makes it really easy to share passwords internally, or even LastPass has a really strong feature, and 1Password just added this. So you can share a password externally with someone else, you know, without sending it in an unencrypted format, and it can kind of expire and they never see the password. So there's a really good function. Yeah, I think, you know, password manager is an absolute must, you know, for security. 2-factor authentication is another absolute must for security. You know, it's just a no-brainer. Yeah.
What I love about LastPass is their foldering. Well, there's 2 things in particular. You create folders and you can share a folder with other team members. So all of the passwords that you're managing, and I think you could even say share it without actually sharing the password itself. And so it'll just auto-complete it and then allow them to log in. So the sharing functionality is amazing. Yes. And then, like I was talking about before, and again, like this is just my only experience is LastPass, so I'm not really advocating them in particular. But for people that are thinking, oh my God, like what a pain to use that. Like it's so easy to just remember my password. They have all the integrations on your computer and phone to just auto-complete it right there. And these crazy encrypted passwords are just stored and easily done, and it doesn't take any time at all. So if you're worried about the energy it takes to use those passwords, I would encourage you not to, because once you figure it out, it's actually more efficient than actually typing in the passwords in a lot of different cases.
Yeah, it's such an important piece. But again, it's one of the tools, right? A hammer is extremely helpful when you need a hammer, right? But if you need a screwdriver, you're still going to need that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, so what are some of the other tools you mentioned? You know, we've talked about these passwords a little bit. You mentioned phishing, and then obviously your cybersecurity tools provide different types of layers of security. Can you just describe what when I think about, you know, your solution, I'm like, I don't even know what it would do. Like, what is it? And I went to the school for computer science, and I'm like, what does that thing even do? Like, can you just shed some light on that?
Yeah. So maybe before jumping into what's actually in the product, I like to cover, you know, kind of I created the security framework. That's like the 4 things missing in your practice that make you an easy target for cyber criminals, right? Why is there a need for my security solution? And I think it's really consistent when we're looking at solo and small firms, you know, and it's 4 things. First, there's a lack of awareness, right? There's the, it's not going to happen to me mindset, right? Is huge. I'm a solo, so I don't have to worry about cybersecurity. They're going for big law. You know, I practice family law, so I'm not at risk. You know, they're going for the IP guys. I'm in Oklahoma, so I'm not at risk because they're going for the firms in New York, right? So that limiting belief is huge. So this complacency is really our biggest competitor, right? The second is believing that basics are enough. And then, you know, not really understanding today's threats, like business email compromise, like we talked about, you know, the threat of employees, you know, that kind of thing. The second thing is a lack of time, right? Everyone's busy. Especially when you look at a solo or small firm, you know, they're not just practicing law, right? They're doing their best to do the marketing. That's where you come in. They're doing HR. They're doing their books. They've got to do the sales. They've got to manage the cases. They've got to practice law. There's so many different roles, right? They're stretching so many directions. And so there's a lack of time. So it's like, okay, well, I don't have the time to go out there and figure out what do I need? What are the solutions, let alone sign up and roll them out and train everyone, right? The third thing missing is clarity. That's kind of, I just kind of touched on that one, right? What do I need? What's overkill? What are the threats out there? What's the best way to protect my firm? And then the fourth and biggest one is a failure to implement. So it's not only knowing what needs to be done, and lawyers are great at a lot of things. But on the Thomson Reuters has a state of the U.S. small law firm survey that comes out every year. I think they've done it 4 years now, and they found a consistency that many lawyers know what the issue is, but they consistently don't resolve it. And essentially, they put everyone into three groups. So one is, we have implemented changes to address the issue. We have a plan to address these issues, but have not yet implemented. So we know what to do, but haven't done anything about it. And then we haven't yet figured out how to address these issues. And consistently, about, I mean, it's about 10 to 40% where they've actually figured out what the issue and resolved it, right? From year to year and across a wide range of different issues. So it's been proven that they're not the best at you know, addressing the issues that they have. So if they don't have, you know, the awareness of the issue, they don't have the time to research it, clarity in what exactly are the tools to fix it, and then the ability to implement and address the issue, the odds that they're going to wake up one day and boom, I've addressed cybersecurity, it's good, I'm taken care of, are extremely low. So that's really the problem that we went out to kind of solve, right? Kind of going in with that view and that mindset, really understanding, you know, the life of a solo and a small firm lawyer specifically. And so let me stop there to see if there's anything you want to bounce off of that idea there.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just sort of curious about then how that evolved, you know, kind of like how that evolves into the next step, you know, and what, you know, what those solutions look like for them, because all those problems you described make complete sense. So then, you know, where do they go next?
Yeah. So then the next step is, you know, obviously, what solutions should I use to protect my practice? And so we've kind of curated these over the past, you know, 10, 15 years. We've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in R&D and research and finding the best solutions to protect our clients in GlobeMac IT. And so the first security layer is fun cybersecurity that doesn't suck and can't be bypassed. And notice I didn't just say cybersecurity training, because most people, when they hear cybersecurity training, if they're like me, a sense of dread fills their body and they go, oh God, this is going to be horrible. If you've ever been through cybersecurity training, it's dull, it's monotonous, it's way longer than it should be. What's the end result of that type of cybersecurity program? Very little retention, you know, your security culture is not improved, it's not strengthened, right? So we found, you know, kind of a really modern solution that uses behavioral science techniques like storytelling. They have a set of cartoon characters that kind of go throughout the series. The cybersecurity videos are only 5 to 10 minutes, you know, it's like one of those a month or a couple a month, right? So it's a lot easier, it's a lot more digestible. It actually, you know, gets your attention. And then the questions are actually based on the content in the video, as opposed to most cybersecurity training has what I call stupid simple questions. You can kind of ignore the whole video and guess the right answer. Does that land?
Yeah.
Right. So the first one, cybersecurity training. The second one is phishing training for employees, right? So 91% of successful data breaches actually started with a spear phishing attack. And so training people to look and spot, you know, and find phishing attacks is so crucial. And so phishing training is where they're actually sending emails, you know, our tool is sending emails to everyone on in their team to see who's going to fall for it, who's going to click on a link, who's going to put in their credentials. I noticed a little bit before when I was preparing that you were on Neil Tyra's podcast earlier this year. And I've known Neil for a number of years. I've actually been on his podcast, I think 3 years, right? This might've been my fourth time. But when I was interviewing him, when he interviewed me for Bobogard a few months ago, that afternoon, he fell for a phishing scheme. And it's crazy because you and I know Neil, he's a tech savvy guy, right? And the problem with tech savvy guys, you know, if you'd ask me, hey, Tom, would you ever fall for a phishing attempt? I say, no, I own an IT company. I know what I'm doing, right? Neil isn't, he doesn't own an IT company. He's a lawyer, but he's, you know, far more tech savvy than most lawyers, and he fell for one. So the importance there is that everyone, you know, needs to go through the cybersecurity training and the phishing training, because no one is safe. You know, the phishing tactics are continuing to improve and get more advanced. You know, what happened with him, he got an email from a buddy of his who's a lawyer. They were working on something, so it wasn't unexpected, right? He got the email, signature was a perfect match from name, clicked on the link, took him to a copy of his website. at the time, he didn't really look at the URL because the website was exactly, it was his friend's website, down to the T. I mean, responsive elements, right? All that were cloned. So it looked like his friend's website, and he put in his credentials to access the file that his friend sent him. As soon as he did that, he's like, oh, crap. He just realized what happened. And he went back and looked at things closer. And there were the signs that could have been spotted. But again, they're getting more and more advanced, right? They're reading Influence by, you know, Lencioni, like I mentioned earlier. They know the trust factors, right? The things that cause us to put down our kind of alert system to turn it off, right? I saw this a couple months ago, similar example where one of our clients forwarded an email, clicked on the link, it took them to a perfect replica of their homepage. And again, responsive elements and everything. I mean, it's eerie how advanced they're getting. So everyone needs to go through the training, not just, you know, not just employees, but I think it's even more important for the owners, because typically the owners like to think like, hey, it's my business. I know what I'm doing. I know what to look out for, right? They tend to be more security conscious than the rest of the employees might be. But everyone's got to go through that security training, you know, phishing training, simulation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's, I would say probably, you know, 2 to 3 times a month, my office manager and I are sending emails back and forth saying, is this a scam? Mm-hmm. Because we get emails from our bank, you know, from Chase, and from, it's just, you'll get emails from all types of places. And sometimes even the legitimate emails don't look legitimate. Like they're formatted mm-hmm. kind of poorly and they like don't have the trust factors. Yep. And so then that makes it even worse if the big brand is not sending out communication that looks legitimate.
Yeah.
And then it just makes it even more confusing.
And that's a challenge in itself, right? Again, 5 years ago, you got an email from Chase. The logo was pixelated. There were typos, right? There were, you know, I mean, a fake one, obviously, right? It was easier to spot the fakes, right? And nowadays, you know, when you get a fake email from Apple or, like you said, Chase, or all these different ones, they are nailing it, right? All the little details, the fine print, the logo, right? They're getting all these trust factors. I mean, you know, they're improving. They use the continual improvement process, right? Just like we do in businesses. You know, cyber criminals are using Kaizen, right? To improve, you know, what they do. And so it's so important to have that training element. And the phishing training that we use goes a level beyond. So if someone clicks on an email, typically with most, you know, other similar solutions, someone would get an alert, right? Let's say your office manager is in charge of running this program and Adam clicks on a link. Now she gets to come to you and have that awkward discussion. Hey, Adam, you know, you clicked on a link, so it's kind of putting us in danger, right? It could be an odd conversation, but what it does here, it actually does immediate remediation training. So you click on the link and it says, ah, we got you, Adam. Let's learn from it. Here's what you missed. Here's what you should have looked for, right? So it's a really, really cool solution.
Yeah.
Really cool. The next thing we include isn't as exciting, but it's IT security policies. And, you know, the old adage, the cobbler's son has no shoes, right? And many lawyers don't have security policies in place, right? 58% of solos have no policies. 25% of firms and 2 to 9 lawyers have no policies at all. So getting an acceptable use policy, you know, incident response plan, records management, mobile devices, these things are crucial to put into place. They're not complicated, but if you go out and Google, you'll get a giant long list. So we've kind of shortened the list. We've curated and prioritized for the ones they need to put into place.
Now, what is, you know, as a small firm, let's say under 5 attorneys, what is the actual risk of a breach? Is it to get passwords for other websites? Is it like, I'm just trying to think of like, what are they actually searching for in a small firm or in a small company of any time of any type? Like,
great question. Yeah. I mean, lawyers have all the good stuff, right? One of my favorite shows is Top Chef. And so sometimes they'll make their fancy reduction sauce, right? When they take all these things and they reduce it down to like the essence and the, you know, flavor blast and all that, right? So a lawyer is kind of the similar thing to that reduction sauce. If I hire a lawyer, they're going to, you know, they're going to pay me, they're going to charge me for every page they have to go through. So it's in my best interest to go through all of my documents, weed out everything that's unimportant and give them just the good stuff. And a lot of times the good stuff has financial records, social security information, you know, IP firms, obviously, you know, business secrets, company secrets, that kind of stuff. Medical, malpractice lawyers are going to have a lot of HIPAA records and that kind of stuff. So that's what they're after. You know, there's tons of valuable information that lawyers are kind of the gatekeepers for. Another big one is, escrow accounts, wire fraud. You know, those are rampant these days. It's so important that if anyone does money transfers, they have to have a two-step verification process in place. I can't tell you the number of bullets kind of dodge at the last second, that I've heard direct experiences of, hey, I got an email from my assistant to transfer the, send the money over. Except fortunately we double checked it and the routing information was different than what it should have been. Okay. Again, that's a perfect example of business email compromise. Someone sitting there waiting for an opportunistic moment. They know that Adam's going to be expecting an email to transfer the money in the escrow account. But then right at that moment, the assistant, the person can send the email, shoot it off with their routing info. If the money's transferred, they're done. There's no undo.
That's really interesting. Very sophisticated. Advantage. Yeah. Well, just a couple more questions for you. One is, I noticed that you have cyber insurance on your website. I wanted to hear more about how that works and what that protects. Because when someone gets caught in a bad position, it's sort of like, then what's next? So how does that
work? Yeah, I think it's key. There's no 100%, right? We can do as much as we can to reduce the risk of having a data breach, but there's never 100%. Tesla can make the safest car, but there's no 100%, safety rating. So we've built in a $250,000 cyber insurance policy into BoboGuard. And so as soon as someone signs up for BoboGuard, the next day their policy goes into effect. So that's really important to point out, because most of the time, if you try to get a cyber insurance policy through a broker, they're going to send you an application form that, kind of from underwriting, that's going to have multiple pages of very complex IT questions, right? They want to do everything they can to lower their risk, and ultimately put it back on you if something happens. So the way we're able to do this is our provider only sells cyber insurance policies to companies like ours that kind of prepackage a cybersecurity solution. So they know that as a whole, the people in the pool that they're protecting stand a far lower chance of having a data breach than most businesses that don't have these security measures in place. And so the policy covers you from, it includes investigation, right, to find out who and what was compromised, coverage for fines and penalties, credit monitoring and notification, legal defense, and liability expenses. Now, it's a starter policy. If you're going from having nothing to having this policy, it's a giant leap, right? If you have specific needs, one of the biggest things that it does not cover are escrow and trust fund. If you do a lot of fund transfers, if you have escrow accounts, those are typically not covered by a cyber insurance policy. If you want to have a cyber insurance policy that includes coverage for that, you've got to make a special request and they have to add and approve a rider on, for yours. And it's going to make it, far more expensive because that's a big risk that's been, occurring a lot. But again, just like having a password manager, going from no password manager to a password manager, I don't care which one you use, is going to, reduce your risk profile significantly. And, a cyber insurance policy is also important to have because data breaches are typically not covered under your E&O policy or another policy that a lawyer might already be carrying.
Right. And that's probably something that a lot of owners, a lot of attorneys don't realize is that cybersecurity is not under just their general policy. I was turned on to it very early with my business, just my broker mentioned it or whatever, but otherwise I would have never even thought to ask the question. It's just one of those things like, you don't know what you don't know. So just final question here, what are you seeing evolving in this industry as far, when it comes to threats or I don't want to say like, where do you see the future of the industry? But it's just, you know, what are some things that are coming down, or do you see anything that's unique coming down the pipe, you know, different ways to compromise? I'm just curious if there's anything that you're seeing more trends of, or that people should be looking out for in the future that they haven't really seen in the past. A lot of people have heard about phishing. A lot of people have heard about, you know, like clearly, you know, password compromises, but is there anything that people haven't heard of that's kind of coming up?
Good question. You know, social engineering tactics are continuing to evolve. You know, I've had people get their, you know, cell phone number, you know, hacked, and through, kind of text message phishing. I think that's something that's kind of newer this year that's been expanding quite a bit. So, you know, when you get text messages, be more wary, right? Who is this from? Am I expecting it, right? You know, again, when you click on a link, you know, there's phishing, phishing happening that starts through text messaging now. So I think that's really important. You know, deep fakes, I think, are going to continue to evolve, where, you know, almost like extortion through deep fakes, right? There was a...
What's a deep fake?
So a deep fake is like a doctored image, if you will. Even videos, right? They can create a video saying, hey, I saw you were there, you were doing that. And they can send you a video with your face on someone who you know is not you. But, you know, they're advancing so much, it's hard to tell the difference, right? That's going to be kind of a next thing. That's going to evolve. I don't think it's a major threat today. I mean, it could be in certain ways, but it hasn't, you know, hit a major tipping point yet.
How would that be used in a negative way?
One phishing example that was going around for a number of years, I'm sure it still is you get an email that says, hey, I know what you were doing on your computer. You know, I had the camera running and I took pictures of it. And if you don't send me the money, I'm going to release that picture. So it can go to the next level and it can grab your picture and stitch it on, right, for, you know, kind of extortion, you know, kind of stuff, you know, blackmail, if you will.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you joining me today. Incredibly helpful information. I feel like I have a bunch of action items just for myself to go back to my company with. If people want to learn more about your companies, where do they check you out? What are the domains, and what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, we've created a special security report that can be accessed at bobagard.com/prevail for your listeners. And I think that also gives them access to a 10% lifetime discount, you know, if they want to sign up for Bobagard. And then globalmacit.com is for the other business. So if you've got an all Mac, you know, law firm with 10 to 50 users, we should talk, because we, you know, we're the only company that does just this. And that's, you know, stable, it's growing, it's going really well. But Bobagard is really what I'm the most excited about now, just because there's such a void. You know, again, solo and small firms do not, there's nothing like this out there. And I kept scratching my head when we were creating the solution. I Googled, I'm a very good Googler. And, you know, I Googled so many different ways. I'm like, there's got to be someone that's created a solution, you know, like this for solo and small firms. And I kept looking and looking and looking. I found nothing, you know. So I think there's a big opportunity. And I just want to help people, you know, avoid getting a data breach, because it's a horrible, just horrible, horrible thing that you don't want to go through. So,
well, I commend you for creating that business, because it's challenging to create a business for a cost-effective yet effective business for smaller businesses that actually has value. Because you have to have that perfect balance of, you know, maybe automation, scalability, productized, that actually adds value at a price point. And it's a really challenging sort of you know, balance between all of those things, because you can get crushed if you over service and not get paid enough, and you can get crushed if your product is terrible and, you know, it doesn't add any value. So I commend you for doing that. That's a challenging solution to provide, and it sounds like you've created a great one.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it. And to everybody else, thank you for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.